Welcome to the AquariMax Audio Show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 93, recorded December 19th, 2011. Welcome.
Greetings, everyone.
So today we will be hearing from Robert in Michigan, and Andreka in Oregon, Juliet in Paris, and then we have a special treat for you. I know it's the week before Christmas. People are kind of in a hurry, trying to get stuff done. Maybe you need to relax. So we're going to feature a very special piece of information for you about the ocean sounds.
And their utter tranquility.
The sounds of the oceans.
You'll see what we mean.
Yes.
All right. Well, that gives us a great start. So let's get started. All right, first we're going to talk about Robert in Michigan's contribution. Now, I apologize, Robert, I sort of dropped the ball on this. This was supposed to show up earlier in an earlier episode, but it didn't. But here we go. The Belle Isle Aquarium in Detroit, which is the area that Robert is in, is attempting to win a $50,000 grant from the Pepsi Corporation. And apparently they have to rank in the top 10 of a public poll conducted by Pepsi and their competitive polls. So you can vote for the Belle Isle Aquarium if you'd like to, which seems to me to be a worthy cause, by texting 110635, that's 110635, to the number 73774. Again, that's 73774. And you could also vote at www.refresheverything.com/Belle, dash ISLE-Aquarium. You can vote both ways once a day until December 31st. So you've got a little while, so you can do that. And Robert suspected that the AquariMax community might be interested in something like that, and I think so. It's a worthy cause, as I said, trying to get an aquarium reopened. Basically, this was a beautiful little building. Robert says, doing some pretty interesting conservation work, but then it had to close. And so he'd love to see it reopen, and I'm sure many other aquarists, fish fanciers, naturalists, conservationists, and so on in the area would also like that. So we're going to give a shout-out for the Belle Isle Aquarium. Everyone, please give that a look, and if you'd like to, please vote for it. I will put the information also on the resources page. So thank you, Robert, and sorry this didn't come out earlier. All right. Next, we have a message from Andreka, and she said that she had another adventure with their Amano shrimp, Henry Ernest Small. I love that name, by the way. He was named, Andreka says, after the captain of the ship Endurance that was stranded in the Arctic for two winters. So he's got to be an adventurous shrimp, I guess. And for short, they call him Shrimpy. Last week, he jumped out of his tank again. And Andreka suspects that this was due to a pH imbalance in a 5-gallon tank, as they had just changed the water a couple of days prior to that. And Andreka says, "You may remember a few months ago, I had removed him from the 29-gallon. I failed to realize how much more tricky it would be in a small tank. We live and learn." So, yeah, it's not uncommon to have a shrimp jump once in a while, and sometimes it can be because of something going on with the water quality, so it's not unlikely in a 5-gallon tank that there could be an issue. It's a little harder to balance, as you mentioned, 5-gallon tank, which is why, you know, we often suggest larger tanks like the 29-gallon, but in this case it's not going to work because of you, as you have mentioned and we've discussed in prior shows, the species that are in the 29-gallon are not necessarily compatible with the Amano shrimp, as I recall. So you have to do what you have to do. But it could be something like a pH balance issue, and even if it isn't, Amano shrimp will sometimes jump, and I've had a red cherry shrimp sometimes jump for no apparent reason as well. So the best thing to do, of course, if you can, is make sure that it's a very tight-fitting cover with no gaps. And I don't know what type of cover you have on there, but there may be some ideas to help seal that cover, make it a little bit more difficult for a shrimp to escape. But if you had, for example, a picture of that cover or just an explanation of what type of cover it is, we might be able to help you out, possibly, with some suggestions for do-it-yourself shrimp leap proofing, if that could be considered a word or a phrase. There we go. She also wants to know if our list of recommended reading, just because the quotes and references we make on the show ever make it onto the show. It hasn't yet because there's so many things on that list that we're trying to narrow it down to something that would be reasonable and yet representative, which seems to me a nearly insurmountable task. But perhaps someday we will succeed. And the best to all and happy holidays, she says. Well, the same to you, Andreika, and thank you for your message and for that information about Henry Ernest Small. We hope he decides to retire from his adventures and remain placidly and calmly in that tank. All right. Now, let's move on to Juliet in Paris, France. Juliet has been reading about shrimp deaths because she's been plagued by them lately, been reading up on it, and has found some interesting things, some characteristics that are similar to hers in these things she's been reading. The shell that is split, not longitudinally, but latitudinally, and that buried females are dying before term seems to be fairly common, she says, and that water conditions, mineral problems, and one common issue seems to be planaria, which are flatworms. And flatworms, there are many different kinds of flatworms, of course, but there are a couple of them that show up in aquaria, and the ones that do, there are some really small white ones that I've never seen to cause any harm, and then there are some larger sort of grayish ones that can sometimes be problematic and pestiferous, and so that's probably the one she's talking about. So, Juliet says, contrary to what we thought, a German man has recently published an article about the dangers of planaria in shrimp tanks, saying that they can kill shrimp that have just molted, and also get in between the eggs of buried females and kill them. So Juliet gave a very small dose of flubendazole that kills planaria. There are several anti-worm medicines out there. Some of them are anti-helminth medicines, are like the flatworm type medicines. So it killed planaria just in case, but unfortunately she changed the water and ran carbon for a few days afterwards. No, let me rephrase that, sorry. But so she treated with the medicine, the flubendazole, but even though she changed the water and ran carbon for a few days afterwards, she reintroduced her zebranarite back into the tank, zebranarite being a lovely algae-eating snail that she had removed during the medicine treatment. She put it back in the tank, and it was dead within 24 hours. And she says, it looks like I will never be able to keep snails in that tank again, except ram's horns, who for some strange reason don't seem affected by the meds, even though the few remaining pond snails were killed instantly. Huh, it's interesting that ram's horns would be more resistant to the medication than zebranarite. And there are some medicines that have a residual effect for a very long period of time for certain animals. And it's possible someday you may get away with putting other snails in the tank, but you never know. It's probably better safe than sorry. So that's sad to hear about your zebranarite. They are lovely snails and very industrious algae eaters. So it's too bad that that's what happened. And it sounds like you took appropriate precautions with running the carbon and changing the water. But as I said, sensitivities are sometimes extreme. And Juliet continues, she hates using meds in this blind way, but she was getting desperate. But there have been no shrimp losses since, and she has four buried females, whom she hopes will carry their eggs to the end. One female dropped her eggs last week, but as she was very young, I wasn't overly worried, because I read that this is common. That seems to be common with a lot of species, yeah. Also, following your advice about iodine, I bought some nori flakes from a biofood store and tried a flake, but it is incredibly salty. Must it be rinsed off before dropped in the tank, or is the salt of no consequence? I'm going to drop one small flake in today, but we'll wait for your answer before I give any more. Ah! You know, I did send Juliet an email earlier about this, but as I reread this, I noticed she bought nori flakes. Now, nori flakes, as I recall, are sometimes used as more of a condiment, the type used for humans, and there's often added salt. Now, a little bit of added salt probably won't hurt anything, but so that one flake is not likely to cause any problem, but I wouldn't use that regularly. I would try to go instead for sheets of sushi nori. What I usually use is organic sushi nori, which doesn't have anything added to it. It's just the dried flake, dried sheets of nori, or which is a type of seaweed, for those of you who may not have heard about that on earlier episodes. That is safe, and that's what I use. And I use that with no difficulty. And it has enough iodine or iodide in a form that's fairly safe for the shrimp if you don't put too much in. And it should be present in their diet anyway from other foods, but it's a good way to make sure they get in. It's never done mine any harm, and consistently increases their reproductive rate when I use it, and their molting success too, because those are elements, or that element, iodine in some form, is necessary for healthy molting and reproduction of shrimp. So, I guess to sum that up, say it in a short answer, I probably wouldn't use the nori flakes because it sounds like there is added salt, and I would just go for the sushi nori sheets. You can also find nori as a fish food in some places. I don't know if you can find it in your area, but I believe Julian Sprung markets them under the name sea veggies that you can use. I think that's right. And there are probably some others out there too, but that's one that comes to mind. And you could use that one without any problem as well. But I just use the organic sushi nori that I can find here in Asian markets or in the health food stores. That's what I use. Okay. And Juliet says, I hope that all this mucking around isn't going to be just as detrimental to the shrimp as not doing much before. I was getting a little panicky, especially with all the buried females dying just days before the eggs were ready to hatch, and probably have been rather overzealous. We will see. Well, I know what you mean, because I've been in exactly the same boat myself, where sometimes you want to do too much, or you want to do anything you possibly can, and sometimes it's easy to feel like you've gone overboard. But it sounds to me like you've done some... I would consider those reasonable measures that you took, so... She continues, I am very sad about my poor old zebra nerite. He was a beauty. However, when reading up about them, I found that they are supposed to be happier in brackish water. Now I'm wondering why he died, if it was trace elements of the medication, which is what I believe, and I am kicking myself for having put him back in the tank, or if he'd become ill in the first place, or arrived ill in the first place, or if the conditions just weren't right for him. What can you tell me about them? I fell in love with the snails after noticing the difference in behavior between the zebra and the yellow mystery snail, and would like to set up a snail tank and get to know these animals better. Well, as far as zebra nerites, I am aware of them, but I haven't kept zebra nerites per se. I've kept a couple of other types of nerites that are similar in habits, such as the olive nerite. In fact, we did a podcast some time ago, and if you go to our website, or you just do a search for Aquarimax olive nerite, you can listen to that podcast about those, and many of the things are very similar about zebra nerites, the main difference just being the appearance of the attractive striping on the shells of the zebra nerite is not present in the olive nerite, but the size is a little different too. I think the zebra nerites get a little bigger. But other than that, they're very similar in a lot of ways, and so that will probably help give you some basic information on them. But a lot of the nerites are happier in slightly brackish water. Some of them can travel from fresh water to salt water as long as they're acclimated slowly. Many of them actually spawn in fresh water or brackish water. Their eggs are carried out to saltier water, and then they spend a period of time in the ocean before then migrating back up into either brackish or fresh water. And apparently there are also some species that are purely fresh water, but one of the reasons we don't get olive nerite eggs hatching very much in fresh water is because many of the species sold have to go through this change. They have to grow up in salt water, even if the adults can live in fresh water. So that's a nice thing in some ways, because it keeps them from reproducing like mad, as some other snails certainly do, unabashedly. Oh, it's about time for the break, so We'll come back and talk about zebra nerites.
This isn't a commercial, because it's not trying to sell you anything. It is, however, the part where we shamelessly encourage you to be a part of the Aquarimax audio show by calling and leaving a message any time of the day or night at 801-477-0629. If you don't want to actually talk, but you do have a comment or question, you can just send us an email to info@aquarimax.com. There. That wasn't so painful now, was it?
All right, so we were talking about how the zebra nerites and other nerites don't reproduce in freshwater as readily as some of the others. At least many of the species don't. I have read some reports of olive nerites and so on that have reproduced in purely freshwater, but I think that is because there are various species out there, but the ones most commonly available do not reproduce readily in freshwater. I've had some of them spawn in brackish water, but unfortunately the conditions I had them in apparently weren't ideal for the young to grow up. I think this is partly because of their tank mates. I think their tank mates were eating them. I had them in with some brackish water shrimp from Hawaii, and the eggs hatched, and there were little nerite larvae swimming around, which is another interesting thing, that unlike a lot of the freshwater snails we're used to, their larvae swim actively before developing a shell and acting more like a snail. So the larvae were zipping around, but they got eaten, apparently didn't survive. But that's a little start, and if you go and check that podcast out on the olive nerites, that might help a little bit. So Juliet says, I will keep you posted regarding the shrimp and also her cribs, or her cribensis, which are an interesting type of small cichlid from West Africa. She says that the male is highly aggressive with the female, who has to hide most of the time, but he doesn't bother any other fish yet. Beautiful little fish, though. Fast swimmers. Well, yeah, once they do pair off, if there are other fish in the tank, watch out. Once they stake out a territory, they're likely to defend it from just about anything else in the tank, even fish larger than they are a lot of the time. So you may have to be prepared to deal with that, but we'll see how that goes. And please keep us posted, and we'll keep our fingers crossed for your shrimp. Hopefully you have solved the problem with the anti-flatworm medication. Maybe we'll see an improvement there. All right, now, something I would really like to share with you. I hope that this is going to work. I was reading Aquarium Fish Magazine, the latest issue, and they had a fun little advertisement that intrigued me. There was something called the conch line, and this was something you could do to... You could call this toll-free number and listen to the sounds of the sea at any time. So we're going to try it here on the air and see if it works for us. And so here we go, without further ado. 1-800-286-2326.
Thank you for calling the Aquatic Life Conch Line, where we bring the ocean to you 24/7. Please select from the following menu options. To hear the calming waves of the sea, press 1. To hear the blue whale's mating call, press 2. To hear King Neptune sing Come Sail Away, press 3. To hear an Australian sea lion, press 4. To hear...
G'day, mate. I'm Australian sea lion. How's about we throw another squid on the barbie, shall we?
No. That was cool. I gotta say, that made me laugh. And some of the other ones are even funnier. You gotta hear the arm wrestling octopuses and the what else? The mermaid. There are some interesting ones. So I thought that was kind of fun. But this is kind of a silly thing, but it was fun anyway. So you might want to check that out. 1-800-286-2326. Now. I would like to talk about a couple of other things, too. One, I've been having problems with my rainbow fish lately. I'm not sure what's going on. I've been noticing a couple of them are discoloring, and then I lost a few of them. Their coloring is becoming sort of dark and blotched, and then they die, and this is weird. And so I've lost several in my school, and I'm not sure what is going on. I have, been careful with water changes. I've been watching the temperature. One thing I have done, which seems to have helped, is added a little pump for a little bit more aeration in the tank, in addition to the aeration provided by the filter and so on. But I am puzzled. These are blue neon rainbow fish. All the ones that are in there now were either the eggs were laid in this tank and raised in another tank and put back, or they just hatched and grew up in this tank, and everything was fine, and then suddenly they started acting strangely like this. And some of them seem unaffected. I've got a couple of them that still look a little bit blotchy. I haven't had any deaths recently, very, very recently, in the last couple of days, but before that, I had several, and so I'm very puzzled by this. So if there's anybody out there who has some ideas, some rainbow fish keepers who have seen something like this before. I noticed that Stuart in the UK, he mentioned once having some neon rainbow fish, just the same species, having them all look fine, and then one just suddenly died. But this is something different, I think, because I do notice kind of a blotchiness on their scales, and even a little bit of bloating sometimes right before. So this recent development, so to speak, has been troubling me. So if anybody has any ideas, I would be interested in hearing about it. All the other fish in the tank seem fine. The shrimp seem fine. I don't think this is a water quality issue. I've got assassin snails in the tank. I've got bristlenose placos in the tank. I've got red cherry shrimp in the tank. The tank is pretty heavily planted. There's a huge chunk of anubias that would probably almost fill a 20-gallon high. There's quite a bit of foxtail or ceratophyllum, hornwort plant, a lot of java moss, and so on. And they're all thriving. The bristlenose placos are breeding like mad, and nothing stops them. The shrimp are reproducing. The assassin snails are reproducing. I do about a 40% water change every week, and temperature is within normal parameters. Everything, all the water seems to be in good condition. I'm not sure what's going on. So, there you go. A little bit of background. 55-gallon tank. Now, last thing. Next week, Boxing Day, the 26th. We are not sure whether we're going to be able to release an episode or not, because we're going to be traveling. And so, if we do not manage to release an episode on the 26th, please do not despair. We will be back. We won't miss any more than that day. But we're just not sure at this point whether or not an episode will come out next week. So if it doesn't, just rest assured that everything is fine, and we just may be a week late, but we'll catch up. Which is a little bit sad, because our New Year's resolution last year was to release an episode every week, and if that doesn't happen next week, then we'll be 1 week short of our goal. But I would like to wish you all happy holidays, and whether that happens to be Hanukkah or Christmas or Kwanzaa or whatever, or you don't celebrate anything, but you're just glad not to have to go to work, I just wish you all happy holidays, and so does Kelly, who has had to leave the room at the moment. But we will look forward to another exciting episode next week, so may the fish be with you. Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. For comments and or questions that may be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.